Today's podcast is brought to you by RetouchUp.com. RetouchUp wants to be your photo editing partner. They help you streamline your workflow to keep you doing what you do best, shooting, selling, or just enjoying life. Be sure and listen later in the show for how you can receive a special discount code from RetouchUp.com.
You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
That's right. It's Photobomb Nights. Photobomb Nights.
Photobomb Nights.
Nights.
Check out Photobomb Nights. I got nothing. Yeah, that's, yeah, you got to have a little saxophone in there.
Yeah. A little sexy edition, because we are, if I sound a little different, it's because I'm on the road. I'm in Boston, Beantown. New England in Mass, and I'm up here working a job. And rather than push back a week because I didn't bring all my recording gear, we're just recording anyway, just so the peoples get their episode this week.
For the peoples.
We're for the peoples. That's what we do. And so I'm done shooting for the day. So far in the last 3 days, I've shot about 670 headshots.
Wow.
Well, wow. me and Girl Friday, Savannah Butler, who is assisting me on this job.
Love Savannah Butler. Love Savannah Butler. She's one of my favorite people in the world.
Yes, she's a good human, and she's been helping me shoot these headshots for 3 days. We've been doing like 8-hour stretches, hour on, hour off each, swapping at the camera position. And I have something I have to admit to here.
All right.
This is important. Okay. Like, if I have a superpower, it's shooting headshots very well, very quickly. Like, mm-hmm. Some people shoot better headshots. Some people shoot faster. But you have a hard time finding somebody who shoots better headshots as fast as I do.
Right, right. I have a similar superpower in my vein.
Yeah.
There are people who take better pictures than I do, and there are people who take better pictures than I do, Gary. There are a lot of people
that's
who take better pictures than I do.
That's
so
terrible.
So many people.
pretty much everybody takes better pictures than
I
do.
Yeah, that's my superpower.
Well, your superpower is making other people feel better about their
photography. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
So here's my confession is, after shooting with Savannah for 3 days, I got to the point where I was like, I couldn't tell the difference with her work. Like, she shot everything as well as me, and in some cases, her images, she made some moves that I thought were better than what I would have done. So yeah, she was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
The servant has become the master.
Yeah, the student, not servant.
Yeah, that's from something though. The servant. It's from a movie or something, isn't it? Servant has become the master, or a song.
I'm not sure, but I will tell you this. There is something that I do want to discuss about my experience at the Heinz Convention Center in Massachusetts men's room. Okay, so this is now Massachusetts, Boston in particular, is all masked up. Everywhere indoors, even the gym, everywhere you go, masks are required. And right. So nobody's being all like freedom about it. Everybody's just wearing a mask and going about their business. And you go outside and people take their masks off. It's not a big deal.
It's a wicked pisser. It's a wicked pisser having to wear a mask.
It's wicked hardcore. It's wicked hardcore.
Hardcore.
It's wicked hardcore. So we, I'm frequently washing my hands, and I'm taking breaks where, like, I'll go to the men's room because the line never stops. The headshot line, like, it's like 30 people deep all day long for like 8 hours solid.
What is the event?
It's the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. So it's basically like PPA.
Well, you're going to get a lot of people at that. I mean, think of all the chemical engineers that you know.
A plethora of chemical engineers.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of people there.
Well, the thing is, it's mostly, this is the crazy part. You think that it would be just a bunch of nerdy dudes, but it's basically a kind of, one of the big parts of the event is a meet and greet between all these places looking for chemical engineers to employ. It's like a job fair, and all of these grad students that are looking for jobs. And most of the people I'm photographing, it's actually not that hard. Almost all of them are in their 20s. Almost all of them are dressed professionally because they're job hunting. Yeah. And like there is a terrific amount of really good-looking people at this thing. Like, this is just shocking. Like, chemical engineering is like the new Playboy Mansion. Like, it's just
hot STEM chicks.
Hot STEM chicks. And, dude, hot STEM dudes. The amount of just good-looking people I've photographed. It's, you know, I photograph conventions where it's basically like people mostly in Crocs, you know? And this is, people are like dolled up and looking good for the most part. And so, I've been hiding in the bathroom a lot.
Okay.
Because, like, I just need a break. Like, I've been on my feet 3 hours. I'm like, I'm going to pause the headshot station and I'm going to go pee or something. Even and obviously, you know, when you're shooting a lot, you don't have to pee that much because you're losing a lot of moisture because you're working.
Right.
Like when I shoot a wedding, I'll pee twice, where if I was home, I'd pee like 8 times, you know.
I used to go onto the beach to shoot a wedding and have to pee going out and then not pee the whole time and come off the beach and drive home fine because like my body would just absorb it.
Yeah,
in the heat, in the heat and the sweating and the sun.
Do you know how we were gonna expel this liquid from your body?
Yeah, we've decided to keep it.
We're gonna wind that back.
Listen, Paul Muadib.
Muadib.
We're gonna keep all the moisture inside the body.
Muadib. Yeah,
wear your still suit. I saw that, by the way.
Did you finally see Dune?
I watched Dune. Yeah.
And
I took notes. I took notes for you.
So we could talk about it.
Well, yeah, I just took a few notes.
Okay.
I knew you want to talk about it. So should we talk about it on the show? Because for the three people who care?
Well, okay. First of all, this is a very popular film. And it's been out. So spoiler is, if you haven't watched it.
I don't have heavy duty spoilers, I don't think, really. They're just like one line notes. And I'll just throw them out at you. And you can just give me like a yay or a nay.
But okay, first of all, if you think that we're actually going to spoil anything, it was pretty much the book, and the book came out in 1960.
Yeah,
so
please, if you don't know, I can't imagine watching the movie if you've never, like, I asked my daughter, I said, you need to watch the movie because you don't know Dune, and I'm just curious how it is for someone who's never, because, you know, there's so much backstory that you know if you read Dune, and when you watch the movie, you just feel like, oh, this is lacking. But it might not be that way. If you never read the book, you might be like, oh, this is okay. Yep. But I got the impression that if you'd never read the book, it still wouldn't be okay.
I couldn't say. I've read the book, and I've read the book a long time ago, and then I read it for the 50th anniversary. So I guess it was like 1971 it came out. And so, I read the book when I was a kid, or not a kid, probably a teenager, and then I read the book this past year.
Does it still hold up today?
100%,
which
is cool.
When I read it in high school, a couple of times probably, it was still, I just thought it was the best thing ever written.
Well, the interesting thing about this type of science fiction, it's not based on Earth or our universe, right?
No.
So it's not like, because I'm reading some Arthur C. Clarke, who is like one of the most transformative science fiction authors around, and he writes a lot. Everything is about basically about Earth. And so you have this in the year 2000, because all these books are from the 50s and 60s, in the year 2000, and like they're like typing messages on typewriters. I'm like, boy, you got that technology wrong, didn't you? You know, like, but Dune is like, it's a totally alternate reality, so the technology and all that stuff is still relevant because it's not based on our evolution. So
I've always thought that that was what Dune did so amazingly well, was world building.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Okay, so here's my notes.
Okay, all right, just before that, I just want to say the book, even for someone who reads a lot of science fiction, I read about 50 books a year, and about 35 of them are probably science fiction. And so, and even for someone who reads a lot of science fiction, even some hard science fiction, which isn't like hardcore porn, it just means it's a lot about the science and less about the fiction. It's a slog. Like, it's a slow, methodical, it's like Tolstoy science fiction. It's like Charles Dickens. It's Dickensian.
Really?
It's very detailed.
See, I don't remember it being a slog. That's why I asked if it still holds up today.
Well, it's like 15 million pages long.
Well, that's why I thought the first problem with it, trying to make this movie, well, really making two movies, it really needs to be like Game of Thrones. Because, like, for example, the first 2 hours that we watched, that should have ended with them leaving their home planet.
Right, yeah.
The first 2 hours should have just been backstory, more about the Bene Gesserit, more about, you know, what's a Mentat, and what are they, and Dr. Huey, his conditioning, he's supposed to be conditioned, so he's supposed to be incapable of doing what he does, and that sort of stuff had to be left out because we still have time for it. And even they left that stuff out, still, my first note of it was lots of exposition. It's just, I mean, the whole movie just starts right off. Okay, Dune, desert planets, because of spice and the spice. Oh, here we go. Now you're just reading to me. You know, instead of showing it, they really, it needs to be like a 10-part series.
But the problem is with the book takes place, there is a lot of exposition in the book, but books are by nature exposition. Sure. You know, and to say it's real, and a lot of the book takes place in the minds of the characters, is relatively little dialogue, and so compared to what's going on in their heads, and so that's very hard to translate to film in the first place. Right. So like,
I also thought that it was a lot like the old one. It's the same. It was the same scenes. It's like, here we are at the Hornithopters when he comes. The guy comes over, the planetologist comes over and notices that Paul puts his still suit on correctly, even though he's never been there. And here's the thing that tries to kill Paul in his room. And here's it was like the same sort of scenes over and over, which I get it. I mean, those are the scenes in the book. So, but I don't know what I was expecting. It was like, oh, well, this is just someone else has just reshot this scene is all. I thought the music was too intense. The music is just, okay. That was just, no, there was too much of that. I will say this. It was nice to see, versus the first movie, they finally got the Ornithopters right.
And they got, dude, I thought.
The Ornithopters were off of them. They're supposed to be like giant dragonflies, and they were great. Yeah.
The one thing I thought while watching it was that it looked like it looked in my head when I was reading it.
Exactly.
Or at least,
and I really loved that.
At least that's what the experience felt like. You know,
I was very disappointed with the first movie. Didn't do that. And you've read the books recently, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I also felt like Jessica was just too weak. Wasn't she a little bit more tough, a little bit more of a badass in the books?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and read it. I guess that would
because she's just a nervous mom, like huddled in a corner the whole time. And I recall her being much stronger.
I think she takes on a stronger role in the second half of the book, which would be movie two. So she gets to be more of a badass later on.
Right.
I think.
Okay, but those are the notes that I made.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, it's Dune. I mean, if you like the book, you're going to like the movie because it's the same. But there's one difference that, like, David Lynch's version in, 84 when that came out? I think that was Sean Young's, maybe, was it right after
Sean
Blade
Young,
Runner?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It was her second movie. Blade Runner came out, mm-hmm. and Sean Young was in that, and then it was her first movie after that. But, like, David Lynch's version was, like, bonkers. It had a really bizarre feel to it, and it mm-hmm. really leaned into just, this is going to be weird, and I don't care. But it was a lot more rushed, but, like, it was really comfortable with how weird it was, you know? And I thought that, in a way, the stylizing of the 84 version was a little cooler in that way, that it was, like, weird, and it was just like, look, it's like Brazil. You ever see that movie Brazil?
Yes.
It was like, this is just going to be weird, and let's just go with it. And this one was more like trying to have that Game of Thrones epic gladiator type of feel. But overall, I loved it. And the special effects were great. I liked the music, it was slow and methodical. Like, it felt that way to me, like the book is. So I got the tone right. But it was like, if you watch it and you read the book and you're expecting something that's not the book, it's like, it's pretty much the book. Minus a lot of the intricate details, but it was solid. I'll watch it
again. One of the things that they've never done a good job with on either one of them, though, is the way the book, every chapter would start with some quotation or piece from a book that is being written in the future. And you don't find out until the end that this book is being written by the woman who becomes his wife. And that was a very cool, for a high school student reading, I was like, oh, this is so cool. What is this thing I'm reading? And then when you find out later, oh, that was a great reveal. You know, maybe M. Night Shyamalan, and Ding Dong should have been the one to do this because it has a reveal.
I've read the first four books in the Dune series. I stopped halfway through the fourth because they just get weird and bad.
Yeah, they get really weird. You think the first one's weird. I think I read the first three, like Dune, God Emperor Dune, Children of Dune.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's
101 Dunes.
Dune 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Finding Duno.
Yes.
Dune 2, Electric Boogaloo. That was my favorite one.
My favorite was Dune and Duner. You know,
yeah,
I really
Dune
liked
Duner
Dune
was
and
very
Duner.
Good as well. Yeah. Hey, speaking of right now, as we record this on November the 8th, my family is downstairs putting up Christmas tree.
This shocked me.
Yeah.
The Perry household is doing their Christmas tree pre-Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Like, what's the world coming? Your thoughts, Mr. Hughes?
Oh, no, I'll burn my house down before I let that happen. I will burn my house to the ground. No, we have a strict day after Thanksgiving policy in my house. And it's like, look, the difference is that my wife had this family that was like picnics and noodle salad and everybody loves each other and there's no drama. Holidays are this joyful time. My family was like, Christmas was really stressful. And my parents were like, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents worked all the time, especially being photographers and Christmas. And Christmas was like, it was like a GD nightmare a lot. And we had a blended family and we had to spend a lot of holidays with family members that we didn't like and get along with. And like,
I still do that.
Right. And never again. And so that was our thing. It was like, so I have a very different Christmas makes me tense. And it's taken being with Julie for 15 years for me to like look forward to Christmas because she makes it so magical and it's such a positive experience for the most part. And
well,
so
I would hope that having the kids would do that. Because once you have the kids, Christmas is not about you anymore.
No, yeah, but they're still selfish little demons, though.
Yeah, you know? Well, my kids are fighting about it. My oldest wants it now. And my youngest, who's Miss Tradition, is like, no, it's too early. But I got to admit that I've found in the last couple of years that right about the time I start getting into the whole idea about the Christmas music, it's like Christmas Eve, you know, like I get in the Christmas spirit like the day before. Bobby likes to joke that Christmas Blu-ray will show up like 2 days before Christmas. And that's when I'm like, let's buy some gifts. And she's like, where were you for the last month when I've been trying to buy gifts?
All right. So Julie has been buying Christmas presents since July.
Right.
Like she's Christmas shopping.
Well, now,
all
especially
the time.
You better do it now too, because shipping is a nightmare.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, no. But she seriously is like, you can't go poking around any of the closets in our house because there are Christmas presents stuffed in them all year long, with the exception of probably the month after Christmas. Right. She buys them and stashes them. And so you just can't go looking around any of the closets. That's where she like stuffs everything. So like Christmas is when she goes Super Saiyan. And when she like assumes her ultimate form and like Cthulhu rips through the dimensional plane with jingle bells all over its like appendages, like that's her Super Bowl, her apocalypse, her second coming, like it's her everything.
Yeah, I miss it. I miss having young children on Christmas.
You want some?
That's the best. I'll take yours. You want to bring them to me? Yeah. My whole family used to get up. We used to come and stay at my house on Christmas Eve just so they could be here. My parents and my sister, just so they could be here Christmas morning, just to witness the excitement that is Christmas morning with young children.
Yeah. Well, my excitement Christmas morning is mostly like I have to take video of the kids opening their presents while I try to balance my coffee in one hand. No, we have a great but no hard pass. A month of Christmas is plenty of Christmas for me. I don't know about you, but that's my
opinion. No, I'm fine with it too, but I just feel like maybe it's as you get older because everything seems to speed up because I can't believe it's Christmas time already. I can't believe it seems like yesterday.
We're right on 2022.
Yeah, you know, and so
I remember when they said predicted when the pandemic was beginning and the CDC and other, you know, what do you call them, infectious disease experts and virologists, they were all like, yeah, we're not going to be clear of this probably until 2022, and it's 2020, and we're like 2 years, and it's now.
Yeah, now. Yeah, everything's whoo. Oh, hey, I saw something this weekend. Doc, I love it when you see – I have a photo booth. It's not really a photo booth. It's a portrait station with a high-speed die cell printer that I take to events. So I'm working a bat mitzvah this weekend. They didn't want my photo booth. I get there, I find out why. This event – was in a very cool place down by the beach, brand new. They opened in 2020, and they managed to stay alive until now. Outside, this little bitty yard, fake grass, and they do some things out there. Parked out there is a fully restored mint or light green with a white top VW bus.
Mm.
Right? Beautiful, right? Not permanent. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that this is brought in just for this.
Okay.
You open up the back of it, you know, the little hatchback on the back, and there's a mirror with light bulbs and all the props and stuff you want. And on the side door, you climb in, and there's a photo booth with a bench seat, and you're sitting inside the bus getting your photo taken in the photo booth.
And is it called the photo bus?
It is, in fact, called. I believe it is called the photo bus. Yes.
I win. I win everything. That's it. That's the podcast. We're out of here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted desperately to ask what's it cost to have this because the overhead, you know, I got my overhead is maybe $1,000 to build mine. Theirs is $1,000 plus the bus fully restored. When do you break even? How much are you charging for this thing to give out these little tiny strips? You know,
no, I've seen several different versions of this. There was a guy down in West Palm Beach that used to do. He had the photo truck. And he had like an old moving truck that he converted into a headshot studio, and he would
drive had a headshot, but that's a headshot studio. That's not that. This was like you, it was just very cool. The bus was very cool, completely restored, beautiful, shiny. But I'm also thinking, okay, so if you're getting married, what do they put this in a parking lot? You know, I mean, it would be so limited in the number of places that you could take it. And so expensive to build and maintain, and yet I was still very impressed with it. But then the business side of me was like,
Yeah, you'd have to charge quite a lot for it.
Yeah, I would think that it would be, you know, a couple of grand or whatever to have that thing show up. And even then, yeah, you know, if it's not someplace you can pull it inside, you know, if it's someplace you can pull it inside of your event, so you've got some big party or whatever, and then in the corner there's an actual VW, that's cool.
Yeah, if it rains on the night of your event, then nobody uses the photo bus. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So I want to get back to the bathrooms because I wanted to ask your opinion about this.
Oh, okay. Did we leave the bathroom?
We did. Well, I'm still in it, but I want to go back to the bathroom. So at the Heinz.
Oh, that's right. You were hiding in the bathroom.
Yeah. So what I've noticed is you've got a lot of professionally dressed men, chemical engineers, or chemies, as they're called. And incidentally, they really do look down their noses as civil engineers, and rightly so. Civil engineers, what a bunch of layabouts. What
oh
a bunch
my God.
Of useless.
I hate those people.
You know what's worse than a civil engineer? Two civil engineers.
That's right. That's absolutely right. With their engineering of the civil.
Yeah, this in engineering the civil things.
I have no idea what a civil engineer does.
So I noticed this. I've been to the bathroom over the last 3 days probably 15, 16 times, you know, at different times to wash my hands or whatever. And I tell you, about half the time I'm walking out of the men's room, and this is one of the large ones with the big entrance and people come and go. It's multiple people kind of bathroom. And there are a lot of men, that as soon as they break the plane of the door, they start unbuckling their belt, unzipping their pants. Like, it's their unit is pretty much in their hand whilst they are walking across the bathroom. And I'm thinking, like, is it a time-saving measure because you guys are, like, scientists? Or is it, like
– Is it Boston?
Is it a Boston thing?
Yeah. Is it a Boston? Because I don't recall ever seeing that.
Is it a generational thing? Because there's a lot of young people, but like dudes walking in and their belt's already open and they're just, and then like they literally are 6 inches inside the door and their pants are coming off. And I'm thinking to
just
myself.
Just 6 inches in the door?
Yeah. Just like that's like seriously. I'm walking out and I wash my hands. I'm headed towards the door and several times I'm almost bump into dudes whose zippers are down and they're just walking in the door. And so like, do you think it saves time?
I don't think it saves that much time.
Is it efficient somehow, or do you just like?
I think it's habit.
I guess.
Maybe like, these are people who have spent the last year working from home, and they're just in the habit of like, you know, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. They get in that chair, they start unzipping on their way. They're just, you know what I'm saying?
Wait, do you do that? Do you start unzipping before you hit the bathroom?
No.
Okay, I think there's an adjacent phenomenon to this, and this is like the turnpike rest stop old man golf shorts phenomenon. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
So you're in the turnpike rest stop bathroom, and I'm telling you, every man over the age of 50 who's wearing shorts, instead of pulling down and going over, goes up and pulls under, and in many cases they start to do that as they walk in there. So they're pulling their junk out the leg of their shorts instead of over the top.
Okay.
And they start
Whoa. Yes. Whoa. I have never in my life seen somebody pee from the leg of their shorts.
Dude, I'm telling you, as soon as I tell you, the next time that you're driving down the floor.
First of all, I'm not looking for that. I'm not the guy in the urinal who is looking to see where your got your Johnson coming from, but I've never seen that happen. First of all, how short are these shorts? Because I personally could not get mine out the leg of my shorts.
Well, that sounds like a totally different problem
I'm
to
just
me,
saying. Not that's a problem at all. Everybody's happy. You know, everybody's happy here. I wear knee-length shorts, Gary. In fact, if you can get it out the leg of your shorts, then you're the one. You really do have a problem. More importantly, your wife has a problem.
And you are one gifted individual.
Yeah. You're too
but
gifted.
No, I'm telling you, now that I've mentioned it to you, I guarantee you in the next 90 days you will see it, and then you can't unsee it. You'll be walking in the urinals, you'll see the backs of all the dudes standing at the urinal, and then there will be at least one guy whose shorts are just right up all the way to the thigh, and he's just pulling it out the bottom.
Never seen it before.
How do you shake it?
I feel like you're just going to get it all over your leg. Here's
the thing. I haven't done it, so I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know. You know what? Try it tomorrow and get back to us with a report, Gary. You seem to be in the short peeing capital of North America.
No. Boston seems to be the taking your pants off as you walk through the door.
Oh, okay. Whereas the rest stop is where
the Florida Turnpike rest stop is where. Right. Yeah. So, by the way, I'm interested if any bombardiers have thoughts on this, or are you short leg peers?
Yes, I would love for you to come into the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/bombardiers lounge, facebook.com/groups/bombardiers lounge, and explain to us about the what should we call it? The leg
pee. What's the benefit? We gotta come up with a by the end of the episode we'll have to come up.
Although
with
I do find it interesting that they still put the little hole and stuff in underwear because I've never ever used that.
I don't think I've ever used it.
You just pull it down.
Yeah, of course.
Ladies, I know you're enjoying this podcast. I know you're enjoying this deep dive into how we pee. But you unbutton, you can unzip, unbutton, whatever, and then you just pull down and go back up. You don't go digging in there trying to, like a labyrinth, trying to figure out how to get your junk through your jockey shorts.
Yeah, like Shai Halud. Yeah, you don't have to pull it out through the sand.
Shai Halud. Little Dune callback. That's what
you're
call
welcome.
It, the Shai Halud. No, go ahead.
I'm a comedian. I'm not a comedian. No, we'll call it the shortcut. That's what you do
the
when
shortcut?
You pull it out
through
the bottom.
The shortcut? That's the shortcut. All right.
The shortcut. So,
but you better be long cut if you're going to attempt it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. If you guys, any of you bombardiers out there that use the shortcut, I'd like to know about it. So right. I also think we titled the episode.
Okay, back to photography stories, by the way.
Yes, please. Please continue.
Has something happened? It's only the second time it's ever happened to me this weekend, shooting a bat mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
The horror, I had to send the girl back up in the chair.
Wait, so that's when they put him up on the chair,
right?
and she went up and down.
She came down, next one up, and then I went to the DJ and I said, you got to put her back up again because I didn't
get
it.
You missed a shot.
I didn't get it.
That's a really tough thing to shoot.
Well, what happened was we were in a tight room and all black ceilings, industrial, so no lights going in there, no lights coming out. So I had two lights up on stands bouncing off walls left and right. He packed the floor. And then I don't know what happened. I think I'm having some troubles with one of my Godox lights. I think I'm having to replace it. I don't know why. It should still work fine. All I did was take it on the beach 500 times in sun and rain and surf and everything else. It's a $250 light. I don't know why it wouldn't still be working.
What could possibly go wrong?
Why would it suddenly not be firing every time, after I've drug it through the mud? I'm probably going to just replace it and go from there. And here's the other thing. My remote for my Godox lights. The battery, I put fresh batteries in, and it will show as almost completely drained in no time.
Mine does the same, but it literally lasts forever.
So it's just the indicator.
Just the battery indicator is no good. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
I change the AA's in that about once a month.
Yeah.
And
she goes up.
It shows that it's empty the whole time.
She goes up, and I pop, and I check, and it's dark. And I'm like, oh, I'm getting whatever. So I turn my lights in so that I'm just direct flashing her now with these two lights on stands. And I got a couple, but nothing really good. And I had to make that snap decision. And I was like, she's going back up because I can't not have a good shot of this. So put her back up. So I told the mom and said, she's got to go back up. She's got to go back up. They're all dancing around. Ava Nagila. And I'm like, she's got to go back up. What? In the middle of the dance floor. And I felt terrible, but I wouldn't, not as bad as I would feel if I had to explain that I didn't have that shot. So
yeah,
she went back up real quick.
Happen.
You know, and the DJ was great. He's like, oh, let's go, we're gonna put her up for an encore. So it was like, you know, she bookended. She goes up, then mom goes up, then brothers goes up, then we go with her one more time. Yay. And so he was great. I worked with him before. And so then I got this shot. But it's a hectic situation. It's only happened once to me, one other time, and it was because I wasn't in the room when they did it.
I think that's an important thing to note about wedding photographers, though. Like, every great wedding photographer I know, even the images that look like photojournalism, very often they make that happen.
Right.
And they put people in the position and then cause events to go, like taking control and directing. And then if you missed a shot, do it again. When I was a kid working with my parents in their wedding photography business, assisting on weddings, they used to recreate the ring shot every time. Like, they would recreate the lighting of the Unity candle, the ring shot, and even the kiss, because most of the time, yep. And this was when the vast majority of weddings were in churches, which I think they're probably not anymore. They weren't allowed to do flash or even sometimes any photography at all,
right,
during the ceremony. So all of those shots had to be recreated so that you could get them. So, like, yeah, I mean, that's a great job taking charge. And you know what? They won't remember.
Right.
They won't. Yeah, they won't.
They remember
just
now,
the
but
shot.
20 years from now, they won't remember.
What they will notice, and their grandchildren will notice, is that they don't have a shot of the damn horror, is what they'll notice. Right.
That's exactly right. We got to have the horror. That's
got to
happen.
Make it happen. So, if you can't, yeah. if you miss it, make it happen. No shame in that, dude. That's
so I'm sending that out, you know, to the Photobomb listeners to let you know that even somebody who is as incredibly gifted as I am, in that there are just so many people who are better than me.
All of it.
Even somebody as incredibly good as I am can make these mistakes, and you just have to roll with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Good call. Good talk. Good talk.
Good call.
Yeah. Good. Well done. Well done. All right. I think it's time.
It is about that time. Time for photography news.
Photography news.
All right. Photography news brought to you, as it always is, by our good friends at retouchup.com.
God
love
bless
retouchup.com. Use them all the time. Use them as you need them. No contracts, no minimums, no complications, no guesswork. Simple, easy to understand pricing. If it comes back and it's not exactly the way you want it to be, no problem. They will make it exactly the way you want it to be. And the price is unbelievable. Also, great customer support by phone, email, and live chat. I suppose, I haven't heard, but I suppose the special that they had is still going on for the, I'm not sure.
The restoration?
We're going to give you both the codes, and you can figure out for yourself. They had a special going for about a month because they really wanted to turn everybody on to the idea that you can do restorations through retouchup.com. And all you had to do was put the code GET STARTED, one word, GET STARTED, in, and you would get half off your first photo restoration. If that's not working for you, or if they're not doing that anymore, just be sure and put Photobomb in the referral. When you sign up for a new customer and ask you where you came from, be sure and put Photobomb so they know you came from us.
Right. And by the way, we just last week did our sold out headshot mini session event, which we do once a year. And I used to have to book a whole day, sometimes a day and a half, to retouch all the images that were ordered from that, because we booked 2 days worth of headshots. And this year, for the very first time, I just exported the selections and I uploaded them all to RetouchUp, and they're done. And I didn't have to do anything. So I just couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I use them all the time. RetouchUp.com. All right, in photography news, I got a couple of stories.
Let's hit it.
I'm just surprising that there were two stories that came up about, is it Sam Yang or Sam Yang?
I'm just going to say...
Or Sam Yang.
Whatever you say is wrong, and I'll take the other view.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say Sam Yang.
Okay. Sam Yang sounds good.
Okay. They make lenses and stuff like that. And this is just another example of, just like we've seen with Tamron, with Sigma. Those were like the two big third-party lenses. Then we started seeing more stuff from Viltrox, and now we're seeing more stuff from Sam Yang that is starting to be stuff that you can use on your camera. They've launched a second-generation 50mm f1.4 for Sony E-mount cameras. So if you have a Sony E-mount camera, $750 for a 50mm 1.4. That's not a bad price for that lens. Mm-hmm. Right, 50mm 1.4. And this is the one I found really interesting. They're coming out with a 12mm f2. Wait a minute. No, I had that right. Thank you. They're coming out with a 50mm. I'm sorry. Back up. A 12mm f2 autofocus lens for Fuji's X-mount system. So if you're a Fuji shooter, right, you know that getting a wide, it really doesn't exist. I mean, if you buy the zoom, the Fuji zoom, I think it goes to,
basically the 16 to 35 equivalent, right? Like their wide one.
Yeah. It goes down to like, it's like 8mm, which is like 12.
And it's their most expensive lens.
Yeah. It's like 14. Well, if you get it at F2.8 zoom, it's a $2,000 lens.
Yeah.
I have the F4 version, which is 1,000.
Yeah.
Now I'm not sure I would have bought that lens if this had been available. It was $1,000 and it's a zoom, but its widest point is about 14mm equivalent. This is a 12mm f2 fixed, and the price tag on this is less. Are you ready? $499.
Dude, that would be worth it just to see if it works and then use it as a coaster. Yeah,
like I'm telling you, right? I'm just like, wow. So $500 for an f2 12mm, which is going to be 18mm equivalent?
As long as it's good, fast focusing, and quiet, and the quality's decent, I mean, yeah, that's you can't go wrong.
So this, yeah, I'm just waiting for someone, because I get these all the time now. People wanting me to do stuff on my YouTube channel and give me. I'm just waiting for someone to contact me and say, "Would you like to review this lens?" Yes, I would. Please, please send me that lens. I would like to check that lens out. So that's a very, very interesting lens. I can easily see if you're a Fuji shooter, if you're a street photographer, say you're an X-T30 photographer, and you're just looking for a small lens, prime that you can mount all the time. Man, this is your big wide for $500. Yeah, if this lens is if the optical quality is in any way decent, this is a good buy.
Yeah, that's a good price. Speaking of lenses, I got a couple of little lens tidbits. So one of the big questions about the RF lens lineup for a Canon is when third-party companies are going to start coming out with lenses for this. And so Sigma has announced that they will be addressing, and I assume that means that lenses will be coming out, lenses for the RF mount in 2022. And now if you are paying attention to the photography industry, Sigma has really become the best alternative to your camera's native lenses. They really do, yeah. In the opinion of most of the photographers I know, they make the best third-party lenses in the business. And so it really is a great option for many photographers to go with the Sigma version. And in many cases, I know photographers who prefer Sema lenses to the original mounts in cases of some of their art lenses.
They had an art lens 50 or an art lens 80 that I know several portrait photographers, that was their main lens in the studio.
Yeah, so apparently as of 2022, you should start looking for Sigma to get serious about making lenses for the RF mount. And since, as we said, 2022 is like literally right here,
yeah,
that's not long to wait. So that's pretty good news for those of you who like the Sigma lenses. Also a quick hit, Viltrox, which is the lens company that I wasn't even sure existed until a couple of months ago, which is apparently making affordable lenses for literally everything, has announced a 85 1.8 for the RF mount. Now, I looked around and I couldn't find a price, but the 85 1.8 or Canon has an 85 F2 that's macro that's really, really good, and that's about $500. So I would imagine that this lens is going to have to come in at quite a bit less than that. So I'm going to guess that you'll be able to get this one from $299 to $349, be able to get an 85-1.8 for that RF mount. Now, I haven't tried any Viltrox lenses. I think you have. Haven't you reviewed a Viltrox lens? Yeah. How is it?
I have one, yeah. It's nice. It's, you know, you get what you pay for situation. It's absolutely worth a value lens for the price. I think it's like $300. And I think mine's a 1.4 or 1.2 fixed. Like 50mm. And, you know, I don't need it that much because I got a 2.8 zoom and I use that for everything. So I don't find myself really using it very much. The only reason I would use it is if I wanted to go to 1.4 or 1.2.
Right.
And it's going to be a little soft. Yeah, I've yet to find any prime lens that isn't soft once you start getting around 1.2.
1.4. Yeah, right on. Well, I have. The RF85 1.2 is tack sharp at 1.2. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. I made a YouTube video about it. You feel free to check it out. But Viltrox, like they could become to me, like it seems like they're trying to make all of those inexpensive fixed lenses that Canon makes and Nikon makes, like for their bodies. They're just trying to make slightly less expensive versions of those.
Right. In many cases, not slightly. I feel like they're making lenses that are not quite as good but much cheaper.
So they're going to take the least expensive, lowest quality lenses made for the lineup and go, hold my beer, we can do worse.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's just, I feel like it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's 80% of what the other lens costs, but it's 50%. Yeah, it's 80% is good at 50% of the price.
Yeah, okay. And then, so that's pretty good value. And I think that these lenses will become really popular with enthusiasts once the Viltrox name gets around a little more. I don't think they're nearly as popular as a Tamron or as a Sigma. And so, like,
no, I think they're trying to become the new Tamron. Tamron is trying to become the new Sigma. And Sigma is trying to become brand. Right. Sigma is trying to become, if you own a Nikon or a Canon or a Fuji or a Sony, you might as well have a Sigma as have an actual brand lens.
Right. Yeah, that sounds about right. What else you got?
If you are ordering yourself the camera of the year, the Nikon Z9, you're probably going to have to wait about a year.
Yeah.
The current estimated pre-order volume is about 400,000 units. Can you believe that? They've sold almost 500,000 units.
Already pre-ordered.
Yeah. Yeah. Their volume right now is 35,000 units per month. So it's going to take them a year just to get the 400,000 units out that are on pre-order. I mean, that's got to be awesome for Nikon to be. Oh, we just got 400,000 orders in on a camera that's what, $6,000?
Yeah, but like in that time, that's a year for Sony and Canon to answer back to that.
But even if they answer back, they'll have the same problem.
Right. Or they, I mean, I don't know. I would think that Nikon does not quite have the production capability as the larger companies that are Canon and Sony. Sony and Canon are much larger companies than Nikon, and they might have access to, I know that everything's messed up right now because of supply chain issues, etc., being, you know, silicon, the whole nine yards, but like chip shortages. But
it's not just that, it's us overland in America too. It's trucking. I got a buddy of mine who works, believe it or not, he works in a factory that makes cookie dough. They make most of Nestle's cookie dough that you buy. They buy Mrs. Fields cookie dough. They make cookie dough, and he's like, we've got 26 trucks a week pulling out of here. He said, and right now, if you need, if you're a guy and you got a truck and you're willing to drive to Chicago, you can name your price. He said, because we just can't, there's no shipper. There's nobody to do it. He said, if you want to become a truck driver, he said, he heard about one place that you want to learn to be a truck driver. They'll certify you and get you your license and you can drive for them. You don't have to own a truck. And there's a $100,000 bonus after 6 months.
Okay. So hear me out.
That's how hard up they are for truck drivers.
You know how you and I haven't been spending as much time together the last couple of years because of the pandemic?
Right.
What if we rented a U-Haul? Let's go over to your buddies. Let's fill it up with cookie dough. Let's hit the road and make a YouTube video about the whole thing. Just you and me on a photo trip across America, getting paid to haul cookie dough.
Eating cookie dough.
Free vacation. All we got to do is fill the truck up with cookie dough.
Here's the great thing about the cookie dough factory that he works at. Every day, every type of cookie they make, they are baked up fresh and left in the break room.
Oh, yeah, that's right? Bad news. That's
horrible. Fresh cookies in the break room every day.
Yeah, the break room is also called the pre-diabetes room or Willy Wonka's demise. Yeah.
At Christmas, everyone gets free insulin.
Yeah, oh, that's nice. Yeah. That's your Christmas bonus. Yeah, that's good
place. Good place.
Everybody
to work.
Gets an insulin pump right on.
Yeah, also, like, if you ever have those things where the kids come around, they're selling cookie dough for a school deal.
Yes.
That's my friend's company, too. They do all the cookie dough fundraisers.
Very cool. Okay, so in other Canon news, Canon has quietly released rebates on a lot of equipment. So you can actually, if you're looking to pick up certain things, you can save a bit of money. Right now, the EOS R is a $200 rebate. You can save that only $15.99 new instead of $17.99. The EOS R combo with a 24-105 and the Canon EOS M50 Mark II, great little travel camera, is $100 off. Let's see, the lenses. So a lot of the EF lenses, 10-22, 17-40, 17-55, 24mm are all on rebate with at least $100 off each one of those and various things. And I'll go ahead and I'll post a link to that in the Bombardier's Lounge Facebook group. But if you're looking to pick up some Canon equipment, there are a few things that you're going to get a good deal on. I know plenty of people who are looking for a backup camera or a video camera or the switch to mirrorless, and saving $200 on like the R would be a pretty good deal.
Okay, so Nikon, More great news. If you're an, it's really been just a great couple of weeks for Nikon people.
Yeah. They're still taking that cocky ass victory lap right now.
I don't know if this existed before. I've never heard of this, and maybe I just somehow missed on this. Maybe you've heard of these existing. Mm-hmm. That there's a company that's a Chinese company, once again, Zhongyi Optics, and they have announced a adapter, a turbo adapter, they call it. And what it does is it widens the angle of a full frame lens on an APS-C camera, in particular on Nikon Z cameras. Okay. So if you have a Nikon Z camera that's APS-C and you put this adapter on your camera and then you put a 50 millimeter standard lens on this adapter, you should get very close to a 50 millimeter focal length on your camera, as opposed to 75, which it would normally be, it would be 75 because it's APS-C.
But if it's for Nikon specific, I think there's only one Z mount mirrorless camera, the Z50, I think is the only one they have. So like, this is for one camera?
If that's the case, that seems like a pretty limited market.
Yeah, I don't know. But the idea of it's cool to be able to say, you know, if, great example. Let's say that you're a full frame shooter in your business, and then you're
let me just jump in. The article says the crop factor of Nikon Z APS-C cameras. So okay. There must be more than one.
I guess. I don't know. Okay. I've been out of it for a while. I may be misinformed. I'm a bit of a man of the world. I've known a bit of world traveling, and I just don't have time to keep up on all this.
It's not
news.
Just for Nikon lenses. You can put a Canon EF or a Nikon F mount lens. You can put any kind of lens you want if you've got the right adapter.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Like, I'm just thinking if you're, you know, if you've got good lenses for your full frame system, but you bought a smaller camera to like travel with,
right.
You can still
or
get,
for a backup.
Can, yeah. Ooh, yeah, get a really a much less expensive backup camera.
And right, get like an APS-C Z for a backup, and then get this adapter, which is $150.
Right.
And now you can just swap your lenses over and get the same field of view.
Yeah, okay. All right, sure. I mean, more of that. Why not? Absolutely. It, you know, that's one of the most frustrating things is having to have a separate set of lenses for your full frame versus your APS-C camera to get those similar focal lengths that you're used to. So switching back and forth can be a pain in the butt. But yeah, that's, you know, I'm for that. Why not?
But I've never heard of this before. Have you ever heard of this before?
No, but that doesn't mean.
Yeah, it very, very well existed. And I would think I would have heard of it. I started in APS-C and I'm in APS-C now. You would think I would have come across this idea that you could just put an adapter on an APS-C camera and then put your standard lenses on there and everything would...
I would wonder if it would affect the f-stop or if it would affect sharpness. Ooh. I would be concerned about
that. They say actually it does. They say that with the adapter and by doing that you actually get more light.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'd be interested to see the effects like that, just to see what it looked like. See how it affects depth of field and your exposure and stuff like that. And does the camera read that exposure and account for it with the adapter? It must, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
So many questions. I bet you'll know by the next time we talk, because now you're going to look it up.
Maybe.
Yeah, you'll make a
Maybe
YouTube
not.
Video.
Doesn't affect me. What do I care?
Yeah, you know what? Like I would deign to do such a
like
thing.
Like I would do research.
JPEG Mini made an announcement recently, and this is really cool. Now, I am a big fan of JPEG Mini, not sponsored by them or anything. But that their Lightroom and their Capture One plugins make my workflow really, really easy. By on export, it can have a built-in, it applies it, it cuts the size of your JPEGs in half without affecting the quality to any point that you would notice. It also has a standalone software. A lot of photographers I know, especially volume photographers, use and love JPEG Mini. It can save you a ton of storage space. And so this is something that I didn't know was coming, but apparently people have wanted for a while. They have released an update for their image optimization app, which adds video. This is very cool. So it doesn't use all codecs. It doesn't do it for all things. And admittedly by the company, it doesn't have as many bells and whistles on the export, like being able to choose and rework videos as much as some others. But as a simple drag and drop way to take certain video files and cut the size in half, that'd be pretty cool. So now you can take like an MP4 video that you have exported for YouTube or something, you run it through JPEG Mini, it'll make it half the size and the same quality. So that's pretty cool. So if that could save you a lot of trouble delivering videos to clients and things like that. So, you know, keep an eye on that. That's pretty cool. I'm certainly going to check it out because I do pay for the software. So I'll definitely check out that update because I could certainly use it with all the videos that I'm making.
Quick hit. If you have a Fuji Instax Instax printer,
I do.
Is it Instax? Do you have? Yeah, that's right. You have the one I do, right? The little square one.
I have the freestanding one, the one that's not the it's not a camera. It's just the Bluetooth printer.
Yeah, right. I do have just that. I have that too. That little printer, and I used it this weekend. Went down to do temple pictures first thing in the morning, you know, and everything was great. And then I'm packing up, and they're packing up, and I walked over to the mom, and I handed her this Polaroid of her and her kids. Standing up there having their, you know, that when I, you know, straight from my camera, print it out, hand it to her. I said, here's a little something to put on your refrigerator until, you know, until everything else is ready. And she went nuts for it. Oh my God, this is so great. Thank you very much. It's wonderful. And you can pick these up for like $100.
Yeah, they're about $100. A little more. Yeah,
about $100. And it's about $1 a print. And it's a wonderful little tool to use and to endear you to people.
Great for networking, by the way. I use these at like Chamber of Commerce networking events and stuff when I'm shooting events. And I will just, when I have downtime, I'll print a half a dozen and I'll hand them to the people that are in them and they love them. Yeah, it's like it's better than a business card every day of the week.
Well, they're coming out with a new one and it is wide format.
Ooh.
Because I print straight from my camera. You can, if you send it to your phone first and then you can edit a little bit in your phone and then you can send it to the printer from there. It's one extra step and I can't always
it
get
it
to work right.
It is a pain in the butt if you don't shoot Fuji to use it
but
in
if,
that
yeah,
way.
But if you shoot Fuji, you can go straight from your camera and it's a piece of cake. Shoot it straight from your camera straight to the printer and it comes out. But you can't do anything to it on the back. All you can do is pick where the square is. You can't make the square smaller. You can't crop. Right. You know, it's just pick which part you're going to let the square be. This is a wide format printer. So you get this strip, except it's wide. And so you get the full 4x6 dimension. It's 2-3 dimension when you print it. So now I'm like, as soon as I finish using this film, I'm going to think about maybe getting the wide format one. Because that has been a problem where I've like many times the picture I want to give out is a picture of a family.
Is
of
it 2x3?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The dimensions are probably 2 to 3. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds, especially if you have to print straight from the camera. That sounds pretty. It is a really neat little printer. I think and the form factor, people love it. I like the square one, but even taking it to the phone and then to it is a pain in the butt because you always shoot composing. You know, in landscape,
right?
Or
you compose in 2-3, and now all of a sudden you got to print in 1-1.
Yeah. So if like I have to, if I know I might want to print it, I give it a lot of room.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but it's a cool printer, totally worth checking out. Yeah. Okay. So let's do this. This is what I think is the big news this week. Let's talk about drones. The DJI Mavic 3 and Mavic 3 Cinedrone have been recently announced, and the drone community is pretty much losing their GD minds over it. They're either mad that it is $1,000 more than the previous version, even the base model, or they are blown away by how incredibly kick-ass this drone is purported to be. It's got a 20-megapixel 4/3 CMOS sensor or a 12-megapixel 1/2-inch CMOS sensor. So basically, like, you have a very, very small sensor on these drones. And this is, I think, the largest sensor they've ever put into the drone. So you should be able to get some really incredible quality. In addition to, the camera is a Hasselblad. So, I mean.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're into Hasselblad, that's very nice to have a Hasselblad on your drone, you know. So it's good stuff. I think that's pretty excellent. Now, here are some other features. They've added 15 minutes of flight time, making the flight time up to 46 minutes. And so you could fly a drone from, like, Orlando to Ocala before the battery died, which is like, yeah. Or you could take it from New York City past Hoboken and all the way up to the Finger Lakes, but whatever. So it's pretty cool. So that's a huge boost in flight time. You can get up to 1 terabyte of internal storage. It shoots all these cool codecs, H.264 and 265 for you video people. It can record at 200 and 140 megabits per second. So it's a really good, thick, robust video file with lots of detail and high dynamic range. It shoots Apple ProRes 422 HQ, 10-bit log footage. It'll shoot RAW and JPEGs. It works with OcuSync, so you can almost use it as an FPV sometimes if you want to. It's just incredible specs on this thing. And it's got some more, like, omnidirectional avoidance system. So, like, if anything comes at it from almost any direction, it can move out of the way, which is pretty neat. So Yeah, it looks like a really killer drone. People are complaining that it starts at $2,999. And so, Bure, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Let's turn back time. Let's turn back time to the year 2000.
All right.
So in the year 2000, if I said to you, Bure, I'm going to sell you a flying camera. It's a Hasselblad. It can fly, and it'll fly for almost an hour. It does video. It does video and photos better than any camera that exists currently on the market. Right. It can track you and follow you. It can spin around. It can avoid obstacles. And it's so much fun that it'll make you feel like a child the first time you use it and every time after that. And how much would you pay me for that?
Well, I would think something like that would be probably $50,000.
Because
we didn't even have cell phones.
Boy, you're so far off.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near $50,000. What if I sold it to you for $3,000?
Well, that, my friend, seems like a deal.
Well, you got yourself a sign here on the dotted line, and here we go. Yeah, no, it's yeah.
Sign on the line that is dotted.
Sign on this dotted line. Give me a John Hancock, son. No, but like, it's ridiculous the stuff that it does for three. Like, here's the thing: for $3,000, you could get like a Sony A7 IV, and you could throw it really high in the air,
but right.
It won't stay up for, you know what I mean? $3,000 is for what that does is a completely reasonable amount of money to me. And I believe, and again, I'm not defending DJI. I don't know these people, anything, but like the amount that they've added to it, the increased sensor size, the flight time, all these extra capabilities, all this other stuff, $3,000. Oh, people pay for like a lens. They pay $3,000,
right.
And like a flying computer that you can control with your mind. They're like, nah, it's too expensive. Like, I just don't understand people. But like, yeah, I mean, I think it seems still, even at that price, seems like good value for money. And I know that the drone people out there are freaking out. So if you're looking at getting a drone, you've been thinking about one, and you want to get really serious, might be one to look at. And I think people are gonna wait to be able to get their hands on one of these.
Photobomb is written and produced by Bure Perry and Gary Hughes. You can find us online at facebook.com/groups/bombardiers lounge.
Bombardiers.
My website, or rather our website, is photobombpodcast.com. My website is bureperry.com, and Gary's website is hughesfioretti.com.
So it is.
You can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com, and we'll see you back here next week.
See you later.